Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Blue Collar BS with your host Brad and
Steve.
Oh, you actually remembered your name today.
That's awesome. I did. It's so Gen Alpha of me.
We haven't gotten to the Gen Alpha of this conversation yet, and that is going to be a whole different hiring world. Which brings in our transition for today's topic, Mr. Doyle. It's the hiring process. It is early April. Spring is in the air. Yep. Contractors are busier than shit, and they're going, oh, we don't have any people. We have to go hire everybody.
That's right.
We both work with our clients in finding opportunities to create a higher success rate for them.
Right.
They don't always listen. Because they know better, and they've already we don't do it that way.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And how's that working out for you?
Yep.
Try something different. And we talked before the show, kind of going through what are the steps to make a good hiring process and practice versus hiring out of fear that I just need a body here tomorrow and hope it all works out. So what are you using with your clients or do with your clients to support them in that journey?
Yeah. So in our practice, what we're actually working on, we call it the hiring hero for construction. And the number one thing that we do in the process itself is really the identification of what is the job role / job description. So we kind of do a needs analysis first, along with creating.
I just need somebody to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Don't we all? Don't we all need somebody to show up? But what do you want them to do? What are they held accountable for?
Well, they just need to be here, Steve. They just need to be here and do things. They just need to be and get things done. Mm-hmm. They just need to go to the job site and get things done. What's the problem with that?
What specifically do you want them to do?
Well, just show up and get things done, Steve.
Just show up. What time do they got to show up?
Well, lately, just when they decide to get there versus, you know, butt crack of dawn.
All right. Right. And how do they need to show up? They just need to be there. Just crawl, walk, Uber, whatever.
Right. Shorts, t-shirt, flip-flops. That's good.
Okay. All right. Okay. And then, you know, because we see it all the time, how do they know what, you know, success actually looks like for them? Like, hey, did I actually do a good job, boss? Huh? Did I?
Well, you're yelling at me all day. So apparently not.
So that's why we've...
Because my super is an asshole. Well,
don't be a dumbass.
Exactly. So we digress and joke a little bit, but I'm sure you have all, anybody listening to the show who's been in the construction world has seen that, been there, done that in some way, shape, or form. Our guest a few weeks ago, Matt Vatter, you know, he's doing very great diligence to take that out of his business, but it's a journey. It's a long cleansing to move this Titanic down a different direction. And it starts with each owner and each leader of each organization to be better so that we can attract and retain. So you got your hero, you got your job description. What do you guys put in your job descriptions? What makes a good job description?
Honestly, we want to know what and how somebody is being measured for success. So it's not like, hey, I want you to, you know, literally I want you to show up every day between 7 and 3. And I want you to have a positive attitude and all that and all of that stuff. Cause that's kind of like a quote unquote given. But we actually, for the better job descriptions, we actually identify what success looks like and what employees are going to be measured against per that job role.
And is that going into your job description or is it a separate document outside of the job description?
No, it goes right in the job description.
Because I've seen it done both ways.
Yeah, that part goes right into the job description. Why? Because we want everything in one area. But again, we're writing job descriptions for roles. We're not writing job descriptions for people. So there's a very clear delineation on, are we hiring people to do work, or are we hiring for the role that we have within, you know, for define, you know, something defined. Now we always do there's always a catch all in the job descriptions. Like, hey, this isn't necessarily everything.
As other duties assigned.
Right. Yeah. Like, there's going to be some other things that you may have to do, but here are the key accountabilities that you are going to be held accountable for.
So, example, would you have in there, if you've got a framer that you're hiring, that would the job description contain no more than 4% scrap lumber from framing of this job, if that was a area of concern?
It could be. Not saying it can't, but
would that be something that would go in your job description, or would you keep that offside to be measuring on something else as part of your other metrics?
For the work that we do with our clients, we would put it right in the job description, because that translates to any, okay, any framer that comes in and they're held accountable to that. Versus if I have a separate document, did I send that document? Was that document actually sent? Was that document provided? How do I know that they actually read that? Right. So we have it set up so it's one document, and the last page of the document is an actual signed copy, dated and copy, like, hey, yes, I understand the requirements and what I'm being held accountable for this role. Here's the date. Here's the hiring manager signing off on it, so that we know that everything is in one document. Because, you know, like you've mentioned, you've seen it done both ways. Where I have seen everybody get burned is, I wasn't told I needed to do this. I wasn't told I was being held accountable for it. I never received a copy of it. You never sent that to me. I wasn't told that in a job interview. And here we are 6 months later having arguments about what roles and responsibilities are, because I wasn't told that.
Okay. I can accept that. That's
can see it both ways.
As long as you have a ability to create variation within your role between, you know, the guy that's coming in at 22 versus the guy coming in at 40, long as that role has variations. So you're building out so you might have framer one, correct, framer two, framer three as a job description versus a general framing job description. And then the one, two, and three on the outside from the expectation.
Yeah. So before we get into actually, you know, the job description, we're talking about needs analysis, and we're actually creating, you know, succession plans within an organization. Like, what does that actually look like? So that's for a whole nother show, right? For, you know, how do we actually structure growth in an organization for an individual? Like, if you're in an individual trade and you want to grow within a company, and hey, how do I actually grow from coming in as a framer? And then, hey, you know, in X amount of years, I want to be a, you know, project manager. Okay. Well, that's a career path. That's a whole separate conversation that we'll have. But today we just want to focus on, hey, do we actually have agreement and alignment with the job description? And the other key aspect with the job description, and the reason why we focus on roles in the job description, is that alignment piece across the company. Does everybody agree in the company that needs to have agreement? Do we all agree on what the roles that this person is going to be held accountable to? Because we've written job descriptions, we've had clients write their own job descriptions, and there is not alignment on what actually needs to be done across the organization. So now you've got somebody sitting in a role, not actually doing anything, but because they were hired, because we hired the person, we didn't hire for the role. Now let's make a job description. Nobody's being held accountable for it. I've got employees over here screwing off, and everybody's just kind of like, well, I don't know. We don't need this role. We don't need this. Okay.
And it's very apparent in many family companies.
Yes.
That's what happens. And that becomes a very large sticking point that cousin Eddie is gotten hired for something that's not doing anything, that nobody believes cousin Eddie needs to be there, but is sucking off of the teat of success of others instead of just being there and being a contributor. Correct. Okay. So job description, really important. Yep. We spent a bunch of time on that.
Yep.
Your next thing that I see in your notes here is benchmarking. Is that from a pay perspective, total compensation viewpoint? How, when you say benchmarking, what are you referring
to? So when I talk benchmarking, it's a composite of a bunch of different things. But when I say a bunch of different things, you've got pay, you've got compensation. But then part of the benchmarking is for this role, what are the key behaviors that are going to be successful? And so, and then okay. when we talk, so there's, so yes, there's this part also has an assessment component to it.
So behavioral benchmarking as well Correct. As financial benchmarking is what you're doing yes. for the role. So when you do a, I'll just use the Talent Insights TI job
yes.
As the yes. job benchmarking yep. as an example, mm-hmm. when you take your clients to that benchmarking, how often do you have arguments over the scaling of what they're looking for, given your knowledge of what the role really needs versus what they think? Yeah, we don't want somebody paying attention to detail. They just need uh-huh. it done quickly. Are you sure? Yeah.
Part, honestly, that does take a fair amount of time. When we talk fair amount of time, we're not talking, you know, this is done in 15 minutes.
No, it's an hour and a half. Easy.
Usually when we do them and they're rock solid, we're talking half a day discussion about that. And there's, but we're not doing it with just the owner. This is where, when we talk about alignment, we have alignment across the key decision makers in the company. Now it could be, and you know, the smaller shot, it could be, you know, a husband and wife team. It might be the executive team. It could be a leader. And then some of their direct employees coming up with this, right? You're kind of looking at, you want to have more eyes on this for alignment purposes. And with right. that alignment also comes the accountability side. Right. So that's why we do Correct. It that way. So, but the conversations end up being really great when they're facilitated. Now, if we were mm-hmm. to do this and just have our clients just do it on their own, yeah, it's done in 15 minutes and you get it back and you're like, you guys, not saying it's wrong, but you are not going to get
it's wrong. We need to redo this.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll say it's wrong. I have no problem telling my clients that it was wrong. The TI job report, so for myself personally and the clients I've used Correct. It with, it's 100% long-term success rate when you follow, when you Yes. get facilitated to go get the thing that you're looking for Mm-hmm. to find the right behaviors to fit the role you're asking them to do. And too often when we go through that benchmarking process,
Yep.
it's usually we're trying to outdo something away from that,
Right.
that entrepreneur that's doing all the work, the stuff they don't like doing. So if you go through the benchmark, it's ironic that they want to have somebody do be just like them to do the work they hate doing. And you go to them,
yes.
so you don't like doing it. Yep. Why do you think somebody, if you don't like doing these roles, this stuff,
somebody,
why would yes, you ask no. some, why would you want?
No,
no, no, no, no. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to do it. You don't like it. Why right. do you think somebody that's not right. you with the same behaviors would like that versus not like it? That benchmarking is very critical to increase yeah. your success rate yeah, for opportunity absolutely. For sure.
Then the, you know, once that part is done, you've got your job description, everything's great. Your job benchmark portion is done. Then we get to the real, hey, we need to find the people. Right. And I will tell you, I often am amazed at where people think they should be posting and trying to find people.
Gas station bulletin board?
I mean, there's that or Craigslist. Those are the first two. I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? Or, hey, I'm going to go stand in the Home Depot parking lot.
Right.
And, you know, that's how we're going to find people. Now, not saying that all of, you know, you're not going to find good people there, but the caliber of person that you're looking for may have an impact on where you're looking. Actually, it really does have an impact on where you're looking. For to fill those roles. So sourcing is actually really huge, you know, for finding the right talent that fits the culture for the people that you want to bring in.
Yeah. And too often we think we can do it ourselves. And so one client we worked with, we did, mm-hmm. we went through the description, the benchmarking, getting clarity. We went to a recruiting firm that I knew, and they use a very, they do it on behaviorals and they go out and they do the search. We thought for sure it was going to be a 6 to 9 month opportunity. We had the gentleman hired in under 3 months.
Yep.
In the role for a unicorn type role in a PM estimating / specialty mm-hmm. construction field. Mm-hmm. And it's been awesome. because we took the time to go do the things on the front end versus just
right.
put an ad out there and hope somebody shows up and, oh, they right. seem like a good person. Let's give them a shot.
Yeah. Yep.
Interviewing. So we sourced it. We got some opportunities. They got through the front door. They passed mm-hmm. the stiff test. And now we get to talk to them in greater detail.
So when we talk, oftentimes with what we perceive we need to do is, you know, look at their resume when they get it and then just start asking questions. Oh, did you actually do this on your resume? Like, oh yeah. Right. Oh, you did. Oh, well, how'd that work out? Oh, okay. And they're very much close-ended questions that are being asked in the interview process. We're not really gauging anyone's, you know, behaviors at all. Or are we, you know, behaviors from the standpoint, like how do they handle themselves in situations? You know, how do they really like being hands-on? And can they work alone? Do they need support? You know, what
are you a fan of leading the candidate through the STAR method?
I am. So when we talk the STAR method, Brad, what are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, we gold star kids? The mommy and daddy patted us on the back and said, oh, you're a star. You can do whatever you want.
No, I'm talking about the STAR method where you talk, it's a situation, describe the situation,
yep.
provide me the tasks that you needed to take care of, the actions you took to mm-hmm. resolve those, and then what were the results accomplished through that activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lead them down a path of behavioral questions or situational questions. Here's the best thing though.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a job benchmark,
mm-hmm.
it gives you the questions to talk about. Isn't that sweet? It's awesome. And you don't have to think about it.
Yes.
And you can do it consistently across all candidates. And then you don't have to worry about any of these other HR problems. So here's my questions. I've asked everybody the similar questions.
So right. the STAR method is really great, but it's most yes. people don't really understand. You know, they're looking for just very short, quick answers in the interview process. Cause what I find a lot of times is the person giving the interview is just as nervous giving the interview as the person coming in getting interviewed. And it's like, no, just have a conversation, you know, maybe chew a gummy or something before you go for this interview and just chill out. You know, that's a whole nother question. That's a whole nother topic.
Right. Preparing for an interview, just be prepared, be chill, just be inquisitive. It sort of reminds me of Mr. Doyle back in 2016.
Hey, we're not
trying to conduct an SBR. Yes. Ask curiosity questions.
Let's not
questions.
Do that.
Oh, my. Sorry, we digress. Anyhow.
I have PTSD from that whole thing.
Yep. We've gone through the interview process. So we've had our job description. We've created the role. We know what we're doing. We've benchmarked the job to know what behaviors and payroll and salary compensation we're looking for. We've done the sourcing. We've created the interviews. Now we have some potential two or three candidates. What's next?
We actually have them fill out a behavioral assessment. So we are very.
Is there anything you use in particular?
Me specifically, I am either going to use one of three assessments from TTI, which is my assessment provider, which covers their communication style. I want to know how they prefer to have, you know, be communicated with. I want to understand what their motivators or their driving forces are. And I might evaluate emotional intelligence depending on the role. I might evaluate sales skills depending on the role. I may evaluate some other soft skills that, you know, if they're applying for more of a leadership position. So somewhere in there, I'm kind of gauging based on the role. But what I'm really getting at with those assessments is I understand how I can better communicate with somebody. The team understands how we can better communicate with them. And then there's also some behavioral components, some soft skills that there's 12 behavioral components that are inside of those assessments that correlate with success in a role. And so that's why we do that. And then I can compare those key behaviors and those, you know, how they communicate with what we set as the benchmark to identify right. best fit. Right. So that's the sweet spot right there. That's the sweet right. thing.
And the beauty of that as well is if you've done the benchmark mm-hmm. and then we'll just, let's just toss, talk DISC for a moment, from a language perspective. If you need somebody that has to be a very high compliance, high C process oriented person, and they come in below where you need them to, where they need to be, but they've shown some ways to adapt, at least now you know what you need to work on. If they fit the culture and they do all the other things, they it could be a 80% match, but they need, this is where we got to focus on. Cool. At least now you know what the potential gap is or understanding is or what to do versus just, well, we just made a bad hire onto the next and then bitch and complain about it.
Right.
So we've got a couple of people. We're not assessing everybody that comes in for interviewing. We're probably only doing that to our final two or three candidates. And now we ask for references. How often do you actually check references?
Most people are not checking references, and they should.
Yes, 1000% agree. They should. And they should be checking personal references, not business references, because most organizations will only tell you, yes, they worked here from here to there.
Yes, the normal companies will. When we look at references, some of my more astute companies will actually send some of their employees out to actually scour their social media profiles.
Right.
And they will see, you know, what type of person are they outside of office, outside of work, because it all translates.
Don't go look for Steve Doyle's fans only page. Don't do it, folks.
If you find one, let me know, because I have never, you know, that would be, you know, why not? Let's see what's out there. It'd be a shock to me, but hey, why not?
See, he's trying to cover it up, playing coy. Doesn't know he has it.
Don't know I have it. Why not? I ain't got time for that shit. But anyway,
yes, references are important. Going through social is important. Understanding who the person is too often, because we do separate work from personal in many cases, but too often today's world, it's blending more and more together that we're not learning to adapt to the environment, because we are so just is what it is type world.
Right. And
it's not what it needs to be. So you got to make sure you find the right things. Yeah. References, check out. We're getting ready to make him an offer.
Yep. That offer is so critical. It's not as much as, so when we make offers, we actually have an offer letter that goes out that includes not just the tangible, hey, this is what you're going to expect, but it also should include those kind of like hidden, quote unquote, hidden values, those company perks that you might have. And talk about and actually have an offer sheet written out that says, yes, your salary or your hourly rate is this. It includes, you know, so many weeks of vacation. Maybe it includes the, you know, your healthcare, health, dental, vision. It might include a vehicle. It could include gas cards. It could include maybe your company has a company airplane and you get to use it one time a year where you can fly anywhere you need to fly for a family vacation. Again, those are all perks. But people, what we try to help people with is actually put a value on what those perks are. So people actually understand, hey, yes, my salary or my hourly rate might be, and I'm just going to throw out the, you know, maybe it's $65,000 a year, right? It could be $50,000 a year, but all of those perks, when we actually line out on my, you know, put all of the perks together, it could total up to at least your salary plus some.
Correct. And
people lose line. They lose visibility when they see all these perks. They don't actually understand the cost for all of those things. So again, it's always good. It's a good practice that most of my clients are following. When they do an offer, there's an offer sheet that comes out that lists what are those non-tangible things that people aren't seeing, and it puts a value on those lists.
Yeah, because total compensation is the thing that's really important. It might be $65,000 of base salary. You might have another 4% in 401k match that's coming in. You might have another $15,000 in insurance benefits and another 2.5-3 weeks of vacation, this and that. What is this all worth? And at the end of the day, your total compensation value is about $145,000. And everybody's like,
correct. Huh?
What? I don't make that much. Yes, that's the value you're receiving. So that offer letter and total compensation is really, really important.
Yes.
After they say yes, now comes the shit show that we all have in every organization. It's the onboarding process.
Welcome to the insane asylum, people. Right. Let's go.
Peek behind the curtain, mother. It's right. Not what you thought it was going to be. You follow Joe over there, you'll be okay.
Yeah. I will tell you, more often than not, that's absolutely what happens. There's no job, there's no written descriptions for, you know, how work actually happens, how work flows. Hey, I just want you to go shadow them and, you know, somebody will be with you in a little bit. There's one of the things, one of our previous guests that were on the show, MRS, like when they make people an offer, they actually send them out, you know, clothing. They send them packages of, hey, thanks for signing up with us. Here's your, you know, offer letter. Here's everything. Dude, we're not giving people welcome packages. We're not actually, you know, making it a big deal. Like, hey, we brought somebody new in and actually make them feel important that, hey, we value you coming in to the organization. And hey, actually, here's what's going to happen in the next 90 days.
Right. I'm a big fan of the 30, 60, 90. Right. You should have every job role should have your, as you're doing your job description, you should have your 30, 60, 90 day onboarding plan with that job description to set that expectation. And just, it's flexible because maybe Joey's gone and now it's George doing it or Sally, but you know what they need to do. You know, the setup, the IT setup, there's nothing worse than dumping on an employee. Oh, hey, here's your new computer. Oh shit, we didn't get it set up. We got to call our third party IT person. You got nothing or your phone doesn't work or any other type of stuff. There's nothing worse than that. It sets a really shitty example for how you run your business with a new employee and first impressions matter on that day one. So
yes,
onboarding is vastly, vastly important through that first 90 days. Mm-hmm. Understanding the culture, understanding the team, getting to introduced and meet each team, being involved with the leaders of the organization. I try to make sure my clients, when they hire somebody, they take that first person to lunch that at least once or twice that first week to stay in touch, and then make sure the leader is touching base at least once in that 30, 60, 90 day period each month so that they can validate their supervisors are doing what they need to do and use that new lens of people coming in as insight for improvement and for opportunity to grow and develop. And too often leaders do not take advantage of the new eyes on their business.
Right. And then the last thing that we kind of usually falls off with most companies is following through on that 30, 60, 90 day ramp up. And because it's like, it's great for the first week, and then things tail off. And the other thing is in that ramp up period is how are the new managers actually, you know, working with those new employees to make sure that they feel that, you know, that they are valued, making sure that, hey, all the other employees still feel valued because you brought somebody new in. Cause there could be a little bit of a, maybe
jealousy.
Oh, resentment. All of those things going on. So when we talk ramp up, we're not just talking ramp.
Right. Nobody did that for me. Nobody did that for us when we came in.
What makes them how so come special?
This person gets to go lunch? You should take me to
now
lunch.
Now there's jealousy. Now there's gossip. Ooh, they brought so and so in. Ooh, maybe I need to be worried about my job. Maybe I need to go look for a job. Oh man. Oh, did you hear how much they got paid? I don't even know, but oh my gosh, I'm just gonna start it. We laugh, we joke because we've been there. We've seen it all. But that whole ramp up, when we talk ramp up, it's not just the ramp up for the new employee. It's a ramp up for management expectations, leadership expectations, team expectations. And we actually spend time coaching during those 30, 60, 90 days for the new leaders, for the new managers, for the new employee. Hey, this is actually what we should be doing so that we can ensure long-term success. And when we follow this entire hiring hero process, you actually have retention over a longer period of time.
you also have the ability to weed out the bad apple very quickly and go, oh, yep, we made a mistake. It's done. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to deal with the problem for months on end, years on end, you go, well, Sally's was a bad hire. And why is she still here doing this stuff? She can't do her job.
Well, because, you know, she does, you know, something good 5% of the time. And I'm just tolerant right now. I just don't want
to. We're back to they show up, they do something and it's okay, but it's not what's there. I've had a friend of mine, she owns a trucking firm. Her dispatcher was horrible for a bunch of years, for like 12 months in a row, finally walked her out, found somebody new, leaving for vacation on Monday. And is like, okay, no big deal. Last year when she went on vacation, it's like, I need to cancel my vacation. This is going to be a shit show, da, 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 because that person didn't take it right, all those things. And she put it on herself, which a little bit was on her. But by the same token, the employee didn't take on any initiative as well. So it's also important for the employee to take initiative of that 30, 60, 90-day plan and show that there's some gumption there and show this is what that looks like and move that forward. So.
Yes, it is 100% a two-way street.
All right, Mr. Doyle, we are well over our time for this particular episode, it seems like. So going back to the hiring process, once again, we are looking to have a very, you know, this hiring hero process that you've kind of put together. Solid job description with expectations. Do the job benchmark. Find the right sources. Conduct good interviews, looking at behaviors, do the assessments on your individuals to compare the gap to, follow up on the references, create an amazing offer letter that they can't say no to, bring them on board in 30, 60, 90 days, and then let them shine for years to come.
That's right. You got it. Simple.
So simple. All right, Mr. Doyle, until we talk again, sir, have a great day.
All right.
You too, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.